Chapter 17. In about half a minute, somebody spoke out of a window without putting his head out and says, "Be done, boys! Who's there?" I says, "It's me."
"Who's me?"
"George Jackson, sir."
"What do you want?"
"I don't want nothing, sir. I only want to go along by, but the dogs won't let me."
"What are you prowling around here this time of night for, hey?"
"I wasn't prowling around, sir. I fell overboard off of the steamboat."
"Oh, you did you? Strike a light there, somebody. What'd you say your name was?"
"George Jackson, sir. I'm only a boy."
"Look here, if you're telling the truth, you needn't be afraid. Nobody'll hurt you. But don't try to budge. Stand right where you are. Rouse out Bob and Tom, some of you, and fetch the guns. George Jackson, is there anybody with you?"
"No, sir, nobody."
I heard the people stirring around in the house now and see a light. The man sung out,
"Snatch that light away, Betsy, old fool. Ain't you got any sense? Put it on the floor behind the front door. Bob, if you and Tom are ready, take your places."
"All ready."
"Now, George Jackson, do you know the Shepherdsons?"
"No, sir, I never heard of them."
"Well, that may be so and it mayn't. Now, all ready. Step forward, George Jackson. And mind, don't you hurry. Come mighty slow. If there's anybody with you, let him keep back. If he shows himself, he'll be shot. Come along now. Come slow. Push the door open yourself, just enough to squeeze in, do you hear?" I didn't hurry. I couldn't if I'd wanted to. I took one slow step at a time, and there weren't a sound, only I thought I could hear my heart. The dogs were as still as the humans, but they followed a little behind me. When I got to the 3-log doorsteps, I heard them unlocking and unbarring and unbolting. I put my hand on the door and pushed it a little and a little more till somebody said,
"There, that's enough. Put your head in."
I done it, but I judged they would take it off.
The candle was on the floor, and there they all was, looking at me, and me at them, for about a quarter of a minute. 3 big men with guns pointed at me, which made me wince, I tell you. The oldest, gray and about 60, the other 2, 30 or more, all of them fine and handsome. And the sweetest old gray-headed lady, and back of her 2 young women, which I couldn't see right well. The old gentleman says,
"There, I reckon it's all right. Come in."
As soon as I was in, the old gentleman, he locked the door and barred it and bolted it and told the young men to come in with their guns, and they all went in a big parlor that had a new rag carpet on the floor and got together in a corner that was out of range of the front windows. There weren't none on the side. They held the candle and took a good look at me and all said, "Why, he ain't a Shepherdson. No, there ain't any Shepherdson about him." Then the old man said he hoped I wouldn't mind being searched for arms, because he didn't mean no harm by it. It was only to make sure. So he didn't pry into my pockets, but only felt outside with his hands and said it was all right. He told me to make myself easy and at home and tell all about myself. But the old lady said,
"Why, bless you, Saul, the poor thing's as wet as he can be, and don't you reckon it may be he's hungry?"
"True for you, Rachel, I forgot."
So the old lady says,
"Betsy,"
this was a nigger woman,
"you fly around and get him something to eat as quick as you can, poor thing. And one of you girls go and wake up Buck and tell him. Oh, here he is himself. Buck, take this little stranger and get the wet clothes off from him and dress him up in some of yours that's dry."
Buck looked about as old as me, 13 or 14 or along there, though he was a little bigger than me. He hadn't on anything but a shirt, and he was very frowsy-headed. He come in gaping and digging one fist into his eyes, and he was dragging a gun along with the other one. He says,
"Ain't they no Shepherdsons around?"
They said no, 'twas a false alarm.
"Well," he says, "if they'd have been some, I reckon I'd have got one."
They all laughed, and Bob says,
"Why, Buck, they might have scalped us all, you've been so slow in coming." "Well, nobody come after me, and it ain't right. I'm always kept down. I don't get no show."
"Never mind, Buck, my boy," says the old man. "You'll have show enough all in good time. Don't you fret about that. Go along with you now and do as your mother told you."
When we got upstairs to his room, he got me a coarse shirt and a roundabout and pants of his, and I put them on. While I was at it, he asked me what my name was, but before I could tell him, he started to tell me about a blue jay and a young rabbit he had catched in the woods day before yesterday, and he asked me where Moses was when the candle went out. I said I didn't know. I hadn't heard about it before, no way.
"Well, guess," he says.
"How am I going to guess," says I, "when I never heard tell about it before?"
"But you can guess, can't you? It's just as easy."
"Which candle?" I says.
"Why, any candle," he says.
"I don't know where he was," says I. "Where was he?"
"Why, he was in the dark. That's where he was."
"Well, if you knowed where he was, what did you ask me for?"
"Why, blame it, it's a riddle, don't you see?"
"Say, how long are you going to stay here?"
"You got to stay always. We can just have booming times. They don't have no school now. Do you own a dog?"
"I've got a dog, and he'll go in the river and bring out chips that you throw in."
"Do you like to comb up Sundays and all that kind of foolishness?"
"Oh, you bet I don't, but Ma, she makes me.
Confound these old britches, I reckon I'd better put 'em on, but I'd rather not, it's so warm. Are you all ready?" "All right, come along, old hoss."
Cold corn pone, cold corned beef, butter and buttermilk. That is what they had for me down there, and there ain't nothing better that ever I've come across yet. Buck and his ma and all of them smoked cob pipes, except the nigger woman, which was gone, and the two young women. They all smoked and talked, and I ate and talked. The young women had quilts around them and their hair down their backs. They all asked me questions, and I told them how Pap and me and all the family was living on a little farm down at the bottom of Arkansas, and my sister Mary Ann run off and got married and never was heard of no more, and Bill went to hunt them, and he warn't heard of no more, and Tom and Mort died, and then there warn't nobody but just me and Pap left, and he was just trimmed down to nothing on account of his troubles. So when he died, I took what there was left, because the farm didn't belong to us, and started up the river, deck passage, and fell overboard. And that was how I come to be here. So they said I could have a home there as long as I wanted it. Then it was most daylight, and everybody went to bed, and I went to bed with Buck, and when I waked up in the morning, drat it all, I'd forgot what my name was. So I laid there about an hour trying to think, and when Buck waked up, I says, "Can you spell, Buck?"
"Yes," he says.
"I bet you can't spell my name," says I.
"I bet you what you dare I can," says he.
"All right," says I, "go ahead." GORGEJAXON. "There now," he says. "Well," says I, "you done it, but I didn't think you could. It ain't no slouch of a name to spell, right off without studying." I set it down private because somebody might want me to spell it next, and so I wanted to be handy with it and rattle it off like I was used to it. It was a mighty nice family, and a mighty nice house, too. I hadn't seen no house out in the country before that was so nice and had so much style. It didn't have an iron latch on the front door, nor a wooden one with a buckskin string, but a brass knob to turn, the same as houses in a town. There warn't no bed in the parlor, not a sign of a bed, but heaps of parlors in town had beds in them. There was a big fireplace that was bricked on the bottom, and the bricks was kept clean and red by pouring water on them and scrubbing them with another brick. Sometimes they washed them over with red water paint that they called Spanish brown, same as they do in town. They had big brass dog irons that could hold up a saw log. There was a clock on the middle of the mantelpiece with a picture of a town painted on the bottom half of the glass front and a round place in the middle of it for the sun, and you could see the pendulum swing behind it. It was beautiful to hear that clock tick. And sometimes when one of these peddlers had been along and scoured her up and got her in good shape, she would start in and strike 150 before she got tuckered out. They wouldn't take any money for her. Well, there was a big outlandish parrot on each side of the clock, made out of something like chalk and painted up gaudy. By one of the parrots was a cat made of crockery and a crockery dog by the other. And when you pressed down on them, they squeaked but didn't open their mouths nor look different nor interested. They squeaked through underneath. There was a couple of big wild turkey wing fans spread out behind those things. On a table in the middle of the room was a kind of a lovely crockery basket that had apples and oranges and peaches and grapes piled up in it, which was much redder and yellower and prettier than real ones is, but they weren't real because you could see where pieces had got chipped off and showed the white chalk or whatever it was underneath.